Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Get expert advice from your friendly healthcare team at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Okay, so I have gathered here now, this is like a dream dinner party. Author Naoise Dolan, author John Banville and author Emer MacLeod, you're all very welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. Somebody responded. The dinner party is off to a bad start. They're going to be quiet crowd today. And you've all got summer book recommendations for us. I hesitate to say beach reads, like I'm in John Banville on a lounger reading the latest Danielle Steele, but it's a good eclectic list here, something for everyone. Emer, do holidays change like how or what you read?
To a certain extent, I would definitely save some books to bring on holidays or to read on holidays. I don't think I have a certain genre or certain, maybe, I don't know, voice that I'm keeping for holidays. I don't really ascribe to the beach read idea. Okay. But like there's so many books coming out at the moment. It's like 'tis the season for beach reads to come out. Like I said, I just kind of keep books and say I'll read that on my holidays.
John, do you go lowbrow for the summer? Or middle even?
First of all, I don't go on holidays. I like to work 365 days a year. I hate the beach. I hate the summer. It's the most boring season of the year.
Why?
I don't holiday.
Why is it so boring?
Because nothing happens. Nature is dead in the summer. In the spring, it's getting ready to go. In the autumn, it's, you know, getting ready to go again. And in the winter, it's in the process of going. But summer is just nothing.
Nothing. Thank you for your contribution. Naoise, do you like an easier read in the summer?
I wouldn't say I change things around very much because I travel so much for work anyway that my idea of relaxation is not to have to travel for a change. But I do take time off and...
You take time off and you read books, time off from...
Yeah, instead of being paid to read books.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, but I don't know how I'd define easy read for me, because if a book is bland, if there's nothing interesting happening in the prose, if it's not giving me any new ideas, then that for me, that's not an easy read. It's very boring. So I read things that I find interesting always.
Yeah, okay. So I'm getting there's going to be no Danielle Steele here today. So let's get to recommendations. Emer.
Yes.
So most of yours are, you said a lot of books coming out. Most of yours are fairly recent books from the last year or so.
Yeah.
Tell me about The Wedding People.
The Wedding People is a book that the entire like elevator pitch of it caught me immediately. It's about a woman who checks into a hotel with the intention to take her own life. And we learn that in the first few pages. So that's not a spoiler. What she finds out is that she is kind of accidentally the only person in that hotel who's not there for a specific wedding. So it's called The Wedding People because she checks into the hotel and she's the only person who's not one of the wedding people. And she meets the bride of this wedding in the first few pages of the book. And the bride, instead of being horrified by this woman's intention, she's horrified because if you carry through with this deed, then you're going to ruin my wedding. And that's kind of sets the tone for the book. So it's got great like dry humour about the type of people who might go for one of these massive weddings. It's got an incredible story about this woman and kind of, God forbid I say journey, but the journey she goes on, the people she meets, how or how not her outlook on life has changed. We get some of the backstory about her life. I just loved it. I've been recommending it to everyone.
Great.
Yeah,
okay.
It's great.
The Wedding People. And it's Alison Espack.
Espack is the author,
okay.
Yeah.
So, Naoise, I find so-called funny books, a lot of the time, they're not very funny. You promised that this one is funny, Quietly Hostile by Samantha Irby.
Yes, I will stake my reputation on this.
Okay.
If I go down, I go down in flames over this book. It's funny.
This is the hill you're going to die on.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Or one of them. There are many hills that I could potentially perish on, but it numbers among these hills. And it helps that the author is a comedian. And I think when someone has to be funny in front of a crowd who will not be at all polite if the attempt is not successful, that helps them be funny on the page. Whereas if you only try to be funny on the page, you never have to confront the readers that you have failed to make laugh. And so it's not as hard a test of whether you actually have a sense of humour.
You explained that so well. Yeah. Okay. And these are essays, are they kind of...
Yeah. So... largely slice of life, observational stuff, but she's very smart too. And I think you have to be very smart to be funny written down, because when you're delivering humour verbally, you can use intonation, you can use timing, all that. Whereas when the rhythm of your sentence has to carry the joke and guide the reader's response in that way, you need to know what you're doing. And so she's a great stylist in that sense. It's just that her aim is humour rather than some other sort of response. And so I love reading someone who takes humour that seriously and scalpels their sentences to make it come together.
Excellent. So that's two good recommendations so far. That's Quietly Hostile by Samantha Irby.
Also a great title.
Yeah. John Banville, you've gone for a book of essays too. So most people know the late Derek Mahon as a poet, but you have picked a compendium of his prose writing.
Yeah, he was a great poet, one of the great poets of our time, I think. But he was also a superb prose writer. And when I picked up this Gallery Press edition of his collected prose, 1971 to 2020, I was astonished at how much prose he wrote and how varied his subjects
were. So what kind of stuff? Like, are they essays?
He writes about everything. He writes about other writers. He writes about his own life. He writes about his alcoholism. He writes about place. It's a superb read. He's a bit like one of those 18th century essayists. He covers all subjects, and it's wonderfully entertaining and beautifully written.
Okay, and also the thing, it can be handy on a holiday to have something that you can dip into, read yourself.
Yeah, because they're short pieces.
Yeah, okay. So that is The Prose, 1971 to 2020 by Derek Mahon. And as John said, that's published by Gallery Press. Emer, you have a debut Irish novel for us by a man.
Yes, by a man.
Yeah.
They're books for men.
All are there?
I always find it so funny when people talk about women's fiction and there's no men's fiction, and it's like, well, God forbid a man might stumble into the into a section and pick up a book meant for a woman. But yeah. This is by Oisín McKenna, who's an Irish author who lives in London, and this is his much lauded debut novel, which came out last year. I just love
this. It's called Evenings and Weekends.
Evenings and Weekends. And it's kind of based around that concept of, like, are you just living for the evenings and weekends? And we get that sense from the four main characters in this, set in London over the weekend of the summer solstice, and it's building towards a party, and there's four main characters. One is Phil and his best friend Maggie and her partner Ed, and then Phil's Irish mother Rosaline. So he's kind of first generation Irish immigrant to London, and it's their four interconnecting lives. I love books that are set over a really concise, small, frenetic time frame.
Yeah.
And the heat, and one of the characters in the book is this whale that's stranded in the Thames, and it's all, as I said, building towards this party in kind of a squat. And it's just a great read, and I kind of picked it. I was saying to your researcher that some of these books people might think, oh, they're books for their women's fiction. We don't want men to read that, but I think this is a book that really anyone could enjoy.
You wanted to briefly mention a couple of other Irish novels as well, didn't you, Emer?
Yeah, well, I was finding it difficult to pick a few. So Kathy Sweeney, Breakdown, is another one. Not a traditional beach read, maybe a bit of a woman who runs away from her life. And Caroline O'Donoghue's The Rachel Incident, which I think is one of the best Irish books over the past few years.
Yeah, okay. So Nisha, we have K-pop and K-beauty. You have a bit of K-fiction for us now. So Counterattacks at 30, is this book going to make me reassess my life choices?
Potentially, Brendan.
Okay.
I'd need to know more about your life to say for sure, but I had the pleasure of interviewing the author, Sonwon Pyung, at the ILFD, and she spoke so fascinatingly about it, and it's a great book too. It's sort of comedically taking on the small ways that you can resist against the system without necessarily being dramatic or self-righteous about it. And I think Irish people will really love that. We hate anything too earnest in fiction, but something cheeky like that, it's a fun take on ways to make yourself known as objecting to things as they're currently run. And it's also just so set in its context. It's very much about Korea. And I think it's often books that are so specific that wind up being relatable, because when we read these bland novels that don't seem to be set anywhere, it's hard to get a hook on that. Whereas in being so specific about her context, and one of the things that she said to me at the festival was she wasn't thinking of it as a book that was going to get translated. She winds up producing something that we'll see so many Irish things in: the housing crisis, the impossibility of being young. It's all there.
Okay. So far, Quietly Hostile and Counterattacks at 30. I'm feeling a theme here in your books.
Yeah, just general combat.
Okay. John, you do like a nature book. I remember you were talking a book about the lark before, I think. So your next choice is Entangled Life, How Fungi Make Our World, Change Our Minds and Shape Our Futures by Merlin Sheldrake. You've been watching The Last of Us, obviously, have you?
No, I haven't. I don't know what The Last was.
Swift's was the book, The Last. I'm not
this
the
is an amazing book. We didn't know for all those eons that we've been on the earth that beneath our feet, these tiny tendrils, narrower than a human hair, have been connecting the world. About 20 years ago, a scientist discovered what she called the wood wide web. The trees are connected, the roots are connected by fungi, and fungi carry messages. And trees will protect each other. If there's something attacking one of the trees, the other trees will know, and the other trees will feed the attack tree. It's an absolutely extraordinary book.
Yeah,
one of the most amazing books I've read in a very long time.
And kind of an argument for the kind of Gaia theory of the Earth as well, a little bit, is it?
Well, I've always believed that. I mean, the Earth is you know, it's just about tolerating us.
Yeah. For how much longer? For how much longer, John?
I think John would enjoy The Last of Us because that really is the premise of the show. It's a zombie show, John. I think you'd love it.
That sounds like Merlin Sheldrake's Entangled Life is a short step from zombies. Emer, I love the title of this next one. So Thrilled For You by Holly Byrne.
So Thrilled For You. And once you know what it's about, that will really hit home because it's about four women going to a baby shower.
Oh, yeah.
One of the great curses of our times, baby showers and their sick little cousins' gender reveals. But this is four women, one who's about to have a baby, one who doesn't want to have a baby, one who desperately wants to have a baby, and one who's just had a baby. And it's told from four different points of view in such an expert way, like four such distinct voices. You love and hate each of them in equal
and
measures.
These are long-time friends.
Long-time friends from college who kind of feel the need that they still have to be friends.
And
they're all coming together to meet at this baby shower where, which ends in a fire, which ends in a crime. But this, it's not a crime novel. It's not a whodunit novel. But you're working towards finding out who set the fire, which one of these hateful slash lovable women was it. It's incredible. It's probably the most beach readie of the books on my list.
Okay.
But
All yours could be made, all your recommendations so far could be made by Netflix and I'd be watching them.
Well, you know, John brought some of his books with him and a lot of them are hardback. So I don't know if you're doing the Ryanair one bag a person, you might have to check in an extra bag.
Yes. Nisha, you read your next pick, Os Gaeilge, but it is available in English too. So you're kind of uncovering an old Irish classic here. It's Lig Shinny Gahu, Lead Us Into Temptation, and it's by Brondán O'Hare.
Yes. And fantastic title. And I think it's one of those Irish phrases that virtually everyone of a certain age will be familiar with. And I really loved how unapologetic it is at being true to its context in a way that I think is very difficult to do as an English language writer who's Irish, even without thinking about it, even if you've never left Ireland, you're on some level conscious that a billion people can read your book and you feel the need to explain certain things or leave certain things out that in this novel are just there without the slightest hesitation. At the same time, it's located in the campus novel. There are touches of Kingsley Amis in it as well. And I should say the person who recommended it to me was actually Martin Doyle, the literary editor of the Irish Times, who doesn't have Irish and read it in English, so I can recommend the translation too. So I'll back the Irish, he backed the English.
So it's an Irish campus novel in Galway in like around 50s, 60s? When did
70s.
70s, okay, yeah. That sounds cool. And for people who like the Ginger Man and that kind of stuff, like it's in that space. Okay. I believe your Irish is going from strength to strength. Is it? You're now a contributor on Radio na Gaeltachta.
Yeah, and I've been writing in Irish. I'm performing Irish poetry next month at an event with REC in Dublin.
Fantastic. So I was going to say, so anyone could do it, but we could all have hope. We won't do it as well as you do. You've picked another language-related book as well, which is Exophony by Yoko Tawada.
And this is actually the one that inspired me to start writing in Irish, because I'd been keeping an Irish diary for, well, nearly a decade now, ever since I left Ireland after college. But I didn't think of that as writing in Irish because I wasn't attempting to create anything literary. I was just transcribing my thoughts. But
Os Gaeilge.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
But this essay collection, so Yoko Tawada is a Japanese woman who moved to Germany many decades ago, learned German and started writing novels in German too. And This collection, however, she wrote in Japanese, describing that experience, but also branching out generally to what it means to leave your native language as a writer. And what I really love is that she doesn't assign the non-native speaker this subordinate position within the language. She's adamant that often the non-native speaker has an almost poetic sense of novelty in another language and can see things that native speakers don't. And so that's part of what gave me the confidence to say, fine, my Irish mightn't be as natural as someone who grew up speaking it, but that doesn't mean I have nothing to add.
Okay, Exophony by Yoko Tawada.
Yeah, it's also a great title.
John, I asked you to pick me one detective novel for those of us who might not be that into crime books. So you've picked a George Simenon novel.
Yeah, The San Fiacre Affair. It's a superb novel. It's a mega novel. I don't usually care much for them, but this is... The first 20 pages of it or so are a description of early winter morning in a cheap hotel in provincial France. It is one of the most beautiful, sustained pieces of writing that I know of.
Because people tend to think of those books as kind of, you know, they do the job. They tell
I thought of Simenon like that for many, many years. It was only about 20 years ago, and the English philosopher John Gray said to me, you should read Simenon. And I discovered a whole world. He is a superb writer. He's one of the great writers of the 20th century. And this is a superb, superb. Now, the plot is absurd, as usual. You know,
okay.
No point in thinking about the plot, but the writing is just... Because really? In it, Maigret goes back to investigate a crime in the small village where he was born. And it's just, it's absolutely beautiful.
Okay. George Simenon, The San Fiacre Affair. Emer, your next book is one people will have heard about and read about. This is an ex-Facebook employee, Sarah Wynne Williams, and her book, Careless People.
Yeah, this is the book, the Streisand Effect book, which is the book Facebook banned Sarah Wynne Williams from promoting, which meant then that it was all anyone wanted to read and talk about. So Sarah Wynne Williams is an ex-director of global public policy at Facebook. And she obviously doesn't work there anymore and wrote kind of part memoir, part, I guess, whistleblower book about her time at Facebook, about the people in the higher echelons of power there, about there's some really juicy stuff about Ireland's involvement with Facebook and some quite charming anecdotes about Enda Kenny and a wine party. And it's just, if you're a bit nosy, if you like a memoir, if you like some nonfiction, it's got everything. And like I said, it's been talked about so much, even though she has not been allowed to talk about it. She's been gagged. But it's just really interesting and not just a read for the summer, a read for everyone.
I feel slightly bad. There were two New York Times journalists who wrote a book, An Ugly Truth, a couple of years ago as well. And they did actually expose a lot of similar stuff. It's a great look at Sheryl and Zuckerberg and all of them and, you know, similar territory.
Yeah.
How they sat by and watched the genocide go on in Myanmar and all that kind of stuff. One guy who spoke Burmese in Dublin was trying to moderate the whole
internet. There's some fascinating stuff about the Facebook employees here in Dublin. Like I said, there's a story about Sheryl Sandberg being given a phone by the Irish government so that if there were ever any problems while in Ireland, she had a direct line to somebody high up in the government. Okay. So it's great.
Right. So Careless People by Sarah Wynne Williams. John, on holidays, you wouldn't know this, but I'll just tell you, it can be good to immerse yourself in a big factual book that you mightn't have time for in real life. So this one sounds good. Foreign Agents, How American Lobbyists and Lawmakers Threaten Democracy Around the World by Casey Michel.
Well, I wouldn't recommend anybody to read this on holiday. It is a horrifying book, absolutely horrifying.
Go on.
We thought lobbyists were sort of, you know, grubby little men who, you know, chased after politicians and in the lobbies of Washington and so on. But these people are very, very, very dangerous. The two main characters written about it, one guy called Ivy Lee, who invented PR, he was a very mild-mannered man. He tried to get Nazi propaganda accepted by Washington. He then, after the war, he tried to get Stalin's PR done in America. He was really, really scary guy. And then the guy who's still alive, Paul Manafort, Trump's man, the things that he did, I mean, you have to read this book to believe the things these people do. There is a whole... I'm never a conspiracy theorist,
yeah,
but there is a whole world going on that we know nothing about. And it is very, very dangerous, and it's horrifying.
And they're bad people, are they?
They are very bad. Well, you see, they don't think of themselves as bad people. They're just doing a job.
Yeah.
These people are there. They need their message to be got through to Washington or to London or to Dublin. And, you know, we facilitate that. We're just facilitators. But, boy, read the book. You'll be horrified.
All right.
Not on the beach, though.
Foreign Agents, How American Lobbyists and Lawmakers Threaten Democracy Around the World by Casey Michelle. John, I should say that there are a lot of people texting in, glad to hear somebody say about summer that it's not great. I'll just read you one. I cannot put into words how happy I am that John Banville has acknowledged and articulated that it's actually okay to not like summer for whatever reason. I'm an autumn winter person. I'm made to feel like a killer of hopes and dreams every time I mention my issues with the summer. John is completely right in my book. Someone else does say, John said nothing happens in the summer. From what he said, the fungi are very busy. That's from Bernadette. Nisha. People who've read Colm Tobin's The Magician will have a passing acquaintance with, is it pronounced Buddenbrooks?
Yes.
By Thomas Mann? Yeah. So you're saying we should take this on as a project maybe this summer?
Yes, go for it. And I can't say exactly how many pages are in the English. The German was around 700, which I would estimate that would make the English maybe 500. German is considerably bulkier than English, as is Irish. It's,
whenever are the Germans more long-winded or are the words just...
The
bigger,
words are
they have
bigger,
a word for everything, of course,
well,
don't they?
I think both German and Irish tend to have a whole phrase that you need to say something, whereas there's just one word in English. Like, to say you've made an assumption in Irish, you have to say, like, Dinter Talav Slaande or Lachterlesh or something like that, whereas just assumption in English, nice and clear. So,
okay, but Buddenbrooks in English anyway,
yes.
Worth a go.
Yes, I would say so. And there's a degree of context that you maybe need for it to fully understand exactly what kind of family he's talking about, but at the same time you don't, because I opened it without any of that context. I know next to nothing about German 19th century history, and I still hugely enjoyed it. And then afterwards I was talking about it with Germans, and I was saying, why don't people read this book? Why isn't it famous in the Angus Free like it is in Germany? And they said, oh, people don't understand the context. But I think it's a barrier that once you push past, it's such a human story. It's so deeply satisfying to be immersed in this family.
And it's a family saga, but set against the backdrop of events.
Yes.
Okay. Okay, so that's Buddenbrooks by Thomas Mann, if you feel like taking on a classic. Emer, your next suggestion is an old one, actually. And when I heard the name Emma Forrest, and I was remembering Emma Forrest was kind of a young rock star of journalism at one stage. She was kind of there at the start of the whole Gen X kind of thing and
yeah.
everything. And
she was one of these kind of precocious 16-year-old columnists in the Sunday Times, and then she moved to Manhattan in her early 20s. So this is the book I actually read last year when I was on holidays in Portugal, Your Voice in My Head. Again, kind of memoir about herself. Again, opens with a suicidal woman, hopefully not too much of a theme, but her psychiatrist, so the voice in her head she's addressing in the title is her psychiatrist, who dies in his early 50s, and she didn't even know he was sick. So she's okay. writing the book as kind of a postscript to his death and telling him how much he meant to her.
So she felt very abandoned, obviously.
She felt abandoned, but she also was grateful for the help he had given her. And it's also, she had a relationship with, she never names the Irish actor in the book, but anyone who reads the book won't find it difficult.
Okay. And so she had a psychiatrist. Was she suffering from kind of, you know, ennui, anxiety,
she
or was she seriously mentally ill?
She was quite seriously mentally ill. So she suffered, I think she was diagnosed as bipolar in the end. She had self-harm, she had an eating disorder. So she had, you know, quite a gamut of mental health issues, living alone quite young in Manhattan, visiting the psychiatrist. And then when he dies, it has such a profound impact on her, but she's able to reflect on how much he helped her. And like I said, I read this on holidays, and in my head I had underlined lots of bits, but then when I went back and looked at the actual physical book, I didn't have a pen because I was by the pool. So I had just tiny little dog ears on so many pages of this book, just little snippets that I want to remember, especially kind of things that might be helpful to your mental health or things coming from a psychiatrist. I've suffered quite, you know, significantly with mental health issues over the past few years. And anyone who has learned something from a mental health professional that helped them, I'm like a magpie going, I'll take that.
Okay, so so that's an old, enough.
I think published 2011. Yeah, okay, so not a new one, but a really good read.
Worth going back to. And of course, this was before people really talked about their mental health so openly as well. Like,
yeah.
Okay, that's Your Voice in My Head, by Emma Forrest. John Banville, you have two books about books for us, right? So, the first one is The Correction of Taste on the Late Novels of Henry James by Dennis Donoghue. Do I need to have read the late novels of Henry James in order to enjoy this?
I can positively feel your listeners' pulses racing. A book of essays on the late novels of Henry James. But it is a wonderful book. It's published by Liverpool Press. It's a lovely thing to hold in the hand. I mean, the texture of books is very important.
You don't go near a Kindle or an iPad or anything like that for a book? No.
The book is one of the most beautiful things that we've ever invented. As a species. It's one of our good things that we did for the world.
Is that one of your great sensual pleasures, is to hold your hand a nice book? Yeah.
Nothing more beautiful than a book. Well, some things are more beautiful, but
yeah,
it is a very beautiful thing.
No, physically, what's a good book to hold? Like, what kind of things are you after? Is it texture?
Buddenbrooks, for instance. If you get the old Knopf edition, the American edition from the 40s, absolutely beautiful, beautiful thing.
Okay. Anyway, sorry.
Dennis Donoghue is a lecturer in UCD and in various American universities. A wonderful stylist, elegant, witty, informative. He writes beautifully about Henry James's late work. He doesn't hold it in reverence. He's can be quite sharp about it in places. But also I should say that this book has a splendid foreword by Colm Tobin. And if you don't mind, I'm going to read it, a sentence.
Okay, yeah.
Donoghue was alert to the idea of the unsayable as he circled around the idea of language itself as pliable material, all the more beautiful for that and worthy of our full consideration, but yielding at times to further levels of mystery, offering itself up on an altar where sacrifices could be made to the strange god of our yearning who would deliver us, by virtue of the thunderous action of a sentence, ambiguous meaning and a sense of what lurked or crouched beyond meaning. As you can see, as you can hear, Colm is a close reader of late Henry James.
Yeah.
But that's a beautiful sentence. Yeah, it's hard absolutely. To listen to a sentence on the air, but get the book and read it.
No, I think we got that there. That was a slightly transcendent moment you gave us there.
Good.
By the way, you drew...
Colm has a birthday in the offing, by the way, so that's a little... Birthday gift to him.
Okay. Should we read the late novels of Henry James, by the way? Just to go back a step. Are they good?
Well, again, they're not for the beach, but they are wonderful. They're difficult. The style is extremely difficult. It's infuriating at times, but you get a great deal from them in the end. It's worth the effort.
Okay. And just finally, and really briefly, I mean, we're really taking the biscuit here now. Elman's Joyce, The Biography of a Masterpiece and Its Maker by Zachary Leder. So Richard Elman wrote a very famous biography of James Joyce in 1959. And this book is a book about the making of that book. So we're two removes... Really. Is this actually entertaining now, or are you just...
It is a wonderful read.
Are you trolling us?
No, it's a wonderful read. I know it seems, impossible, but it is a wonderful read. The first half of the book is a biography of Elman himself. The second half is a biography of the biography, about how he wrote the book.
So the first half is a biography of Richard Elman.
Richard Elman.
Was he an interesting, colourful character?
The second half is about his James Joyce, which is one of the great... biographies of all time. This is a wonderfully entertaining and thrilling book.
Okay, and look, people are panicking saying, can you read out the names of the books again and everything else like that? But we will put them all up on the website, rte.ie/Brendan. Guys, that was fantastic. I think everyone will have got something out of that, even people who don't like summer and don't go on holidays. So thank you all very much. I presume you're all starting to get busy now. There are literary festivals, is one thing that happens in the summer. Nisha, I think you have a couple of events you want to mention.
Yeah, so I've got Spoken Word in Irish with Rec. I've got the Daedalus lecture with Molly on the 16th for Bloomsday. I'm talking about languages and Ulysses. And there's a third thing. Do you know what the third thing is? It slipped my mind.
No, I do not know. Okay.
Well, there's a third thing.
Anyone else want to enter? Are you getting out of the house over the summer, John?
Probably not. Not very often.
Okay. Listen, as far as I'm concerned, that was the literary event of the summer there. What a meeting of minds. Sorry, Emergy, do you have any event you'd like to plug? No,
I'm Grant.
Excellent. Misha Dolan. What? Have you thought of your other one? Quick.
It's a Mrs. Dalloway panel on the 7th with me and a bunch of very other brilliant people.
Thank God we mentioned that. The Mrs. Dalloway fans out there could have missed out. Misha Dolan, John Banville and Emer McLeod, thank you all so much. That was absolutely terrific, guys. We'll take a break.